to RTW Rewind. Red Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Red Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. I'm your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. I hope everybody is doing well all around the world. Thank you for being here. I have a very, very special guest here right now. We've kind of ran the gamut through the powers that be, so to speak, at Hameen Media Group. Started out with MSG, got to Big Ray, the co-creator, and now I have the big man, the one and only, the leader of the group, the owner of the group, the head guy in charge. It is Mr. Ben Hameen. Ben, I appreciate you being here, man. I've really been looking forward to speaking with you.
Yes, it's not Rad Rob anymore. It's Radicalized Rob, the French Francois, the cell from France has been greenlit infidels here on the Rad Turtles podcast. And it's the super shredder Hameen ready to take it to the mats, infidels. Yalla.
Well, I don't know if I can top that. You know, in all transparency, man, I'm a little intimidated by you. Not many people that I've interviewed on my show are actually better looking than myself. So yeah, you know, you're a good looking guy. So I'm a little bit intimidated, but I think I'm a pro, you know, I'm a pro, and I think we can pull through this.
I am very masculine. If you need to turn your eyes away from me, I understand. My gaze is enticing, Radicalized Rob.
Wow. All right, guys, that wraps up the show for today.
Good to be here, man. Good to have you on Hameen Media Group as a new affiliate. I heard nothing but great things from all my producers, man, and they are enjoying the content, and I love that we're expanding and finding great talent like yourself to partner with, and rising tide raises all ships, man. So I just wanted to say thank you, congratulations, and welcome to the partnership and the affiliate with Hameen Media Group. We're glad to have you, man.
And I do appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, it's funny, I was watching your appearance on Get My Go with Feeney and Durban and Husey, and you know, you really blew me away with the way you kind of broke everything down from a psychological standpoint. And you showed to me that you're, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass, but you're, I didn't know much about you beforehand, but you're a very, very intelligent man. And I messaged MSG after I saw the show and I said, hey, and because you mentioned on the show that you guys are always looking for upstarts or trying to give somebody a break that wouldn't normally get one. So that prompted me to message Matt Schaefer Gage and ask him if you guys were interested in maybe bringing one of my shows over. And he said, well, it just so happens an opportunity popped up, and you know, it was perfect timing. So I do appreciate you giving me the opportunity to get more ears on the product for sure.
Well, that's great, Ben. Thank you. I'm glad that we could connect through those guys who are from Get My Go, all producers, and, you know, the kick arounds for other shows. So that's kind of the stomping ground for the internet pundit media of untouchables, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
And I like being there. That's not a bad place to be a pirate on the seas. You know, I don't have to play by anybody else's rules.
Right.
And sometimes you need that pirate to back you up, you know, or people come to us for black market creative ideas and it's not going to come back on them. So there's a lot of gray area that I play in, but I thank you for those compliments, man. Psychology, I have to pay almost all respect to my mentors in improv and in wrestling, Rip Rogers and everybody from Improv Olympic and Second City. And you know, my drive to study characters as an actor, improviser, comedian, and then once learning wrestling psychology after being a 30-year fan of the business or what have you, you know, before being in it, then to learn what really gets the crowd to react a certain way. And then the other part of me is a marketing professor and professional marketing, you know, digital producer. I've worked in the biggest firms in Chicago, you know, pretty much every major firm there has been on multiple Fortune 500 brands. So I know the marketing of psychology as well, and what goes into it. So it's always great to be found or discovered by new people, and like, wow, I get that a lot, man. Like, I try and vocalize this, but this guy's saying it how I can get it and really put it all together. And I'm glad that I'm able to do that for listeners, man. I think that's where we really connect.
And I mean, I'm fascinated by, you know, watching you break down, whether it's Raw or SmackDown or AEW, to just get your kind of viewpoint since you were in the business and you've kind of been around for a while. But I mean, you pretty much know all facets of the business, and yeah. you break things. And I've been a fan for 30 plus years as well. But, you know, you have that added perspective of being on the inside and knowing what it takes to go into making that product, especially on the production side. And it's very refreshing to hear your takes on stuff, because you call it the way you see it. I mean, you're not going to, you know, blow smoke up anybody's ass, or, you know, and you're not always going to purposely put anybody down, but you're pretty much honest. You shoot from the hip and you give your perspective of what you notice, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And not everybody does that, because a lot of people are looking for, you know, a spot to get in. You know what I mean? Like, there's all,
people are smarter than me. You can say it. They keep their fucking mouth shut.
But, right. You know, they all want that one more run, brother. So, right, you know, but
how's that working out for them?
Yeah.
By keeping their mouth shut. We've been on a 12-year steady rating slide. I got into this game to be the best creative in the business, and I just had my, you know, dreams come true getting to work with Vince Russo every day the last 2 years, man. Yeah. You know, like, what else can I do to, like, prove that I'm at that level? You know, if you're talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, Luke Skywalker, I feel like that's kind of the way it is. You know, I'm not trying to sell for myself, but I put a lot of grind into this shit, man. And I lived the starving artist life in comedy and in wrestling twice. I did the deal twice to give myself that credibility. And a lot of my friends and whatnot, when they succeed, I succeed, you know, and they know that I'm not going to burn them or what have you. And when I do hot takes, it's not just to do hot takes for the internet. It's because I'm passionate about this business and performance to start with. And when I see it cheapened or operating at a lessened level, or people who claim that they love this business, that phrase gets thrown around a lot. And then they're on social media pissing it away. Like, they're getting the top opportunities, and then they kick they're really going, no, call me. When I'm this on Instagram and Twitter, I can do whatever I want by my shoot name. But over there, I'm playing. No, that's not how it works in wrestling. This is a 360 media picture, and that's a weapon as a performer for you to enhance your storyline, not take a break from it and show getting engaged and all, your baby pictures and like all that shit when you're supposed to be playing a believable character over on this side of things. So those things I will go in on, but never am I trying to lash out. Maybe a couple people who've fucked me over in the business who have tried to hold me down for whatever reason. I'll come back and get a little something in, but I know the way I do things is the right way. And for longevity, most of the time, I'm not saying I'm fucking flawless by any means, but I know a lot of dudes who had the spot that I wanted, or I wanted to, you know, you deal with scumbags and carnies in any entertainment business. Welcome to the entertainment biz, kid. Now they're out. They're out of spots. And because their carniness only lasts for so long, playing that game the wrong way might get you there, but you're going to burn out or you're going to be exposed.
And I think that's what
going, man. You know,
I was going to say, I think that's what happened to Russo too, because he just got so sick and tired of like living that lifestyle, you know, especially working for WWE. But you know, to be able to sit back and do his own thing and give his opinion and do all the shows that he does. Yeah, you know, you guys are two of the hardest working guys, you know, in the business. And
you got to put over Stevie Richards with that too, man.
Oh, Stevie's amazing.
You know, absolutely. My big brother, my consigliere, and you know, we're a sounding board, or if you know, we got personal stuff going on, and just say, I got a vent, dude, for 5 minutes, and I'm saying, give it to me, bro. I'll take whatever you need. I'm here for you, man. And then we go out and we make money together. And like, that's another part of, dude, I'm an ECW, like, original Psycho fan, you know, early 90s, find it at 1 a.m. at midnight, the next time it's 3, and you're like, the original crew, right? And for me now, after coming through my career and you know, whatever moments. I know you do throwbacks and stuff too. We can talk about that. But like to get to this moment in time right now where I get to advise with Stevie Ray from Harlem Heat, I get to work with Stevie Richards and Vince Russo. I'm supremely grateful for that. I really feel like I've been able to live a lot of moments that people can only dream of. And then to be able to influence or just make Vince Russo laugh on Master Shoot Theater,
yeah,
to see that pure moment, I don't really care what happens if Planet X comes or if there's civil war or whatever, man. Like, you know, I live for real human connections and emotions and moments. And I'm very lucky. And I worked hard to get to this point to be in there. And now I'm just in the conversation a little bit more for the first time again. Well, not for the first time, for third or fourth time. And it's becoming more and more undeniable. You know what I mean? So I'm just going to keep doing me. It seems to get someplace, you know?
Yeah. I mean, 2.2 million downloads that you're coming up on. Yeah. I mean, that's hard to do in this business. It really is. I mean, 700,000 podcasts out there and multiple wrestling podcasts being out there. Of course, having names on your programs do help, but still, there's been other name podcasts that haven't done shit. So,
yeah, you know, I want people to have that opportunity to farm and grow what they want to based off of whatever value my name brings, because I can bring my superstar friends in who show respect to me because they know I'm on the same level they are. But in the fans' eyes, you haven't seen me on TV. And part of the reason I'm blackballed, if you don't know me and you just met me, you won't let me. Well, if I couldn't have it, silly rabbit, why you sweat me? No, the reason why you don't know me is because I do the Bin Laden gimmick. You know, you see the graphics. Everything I do is based off of original 9/11 truth, anti-Bush administration. And I'm not going to change my ways to become a slick talking manager or play a Latino or whatever it is you want me to do until it's really time to sell out. But because I did that on the heels of Muhammad Hassan, you know, that blackballs me from TV. But meanwhile, in the real world, more and more extremist stuff is goes on for 10 years. So, you know, that's what I do. And I'm one of the, you know, not the first guy to do it, but I'm not going to be the last either. So, and I've gotten to tie and fuse those things together, working with Muhammad Hassan, working with other guys who do the Sheik gimmick, working with Sabu. And like, I wanted to do a thing where we're all together with the Iron Sheik and you bring them out, you know, put us all together. Like, let's do that. So it's dream booking and opportunities that I've had to that are outside of what goes on TV. Those are for those people there and for the diehard wrestling fans who know me. But, you know, that's fine that you don't know me. I got into this game to be the top creative. The wrestling and managing stuff that I've done is all icing on the cake as far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean? Like, the bumps aren't as fun, but that's the shit, man. You know, I'm 6'3", 259 today, so I got to – if I can play the part, I'm gonna, you know.
Yeah. Now, there's been other people that play controversial spots like that. I mean, look at Sergeant Slaughter and the Sheik, and who was his manager?
General Adnan.
General Adnan, that's right. Mm-hmm. They didn't get blackballed. I mean,
well, dude, they caught a shit ton.
They did get a lot of heat
up on TV. And if you look at Ben Hameen promos on my channel OVW, I put that Sergeant Slaughter where he does the agreeing and he's got the gimmick on the head. Like, when I say something controversial in my promos, I always put that clip in right afterwards with Slaughter. See, I try and pay respect to everything. The history of wrestling is very important to me. Sometimes people know more stories because I've a lot of things go in and out of my head. I got rap lyrics from 1985 I can pull out like that. So, you know, like, there's only so much room up there. But, that type of shit's important to me. And then my first match, Living on the Edge in 2CW that weekend in 2012? Yeah, 2CW 2012. I got to the point where I brought in my guys, the Insurgency, Omar and Ali Akbar, and a phenomenal tag team that also should have been signed and had everything. They could have done it all. But I get us booked there. And that's Brody Lee's last show in 2CW in the Northeast. So that's kind of like the torch pass a little bit to me, like not to me of what he was, but there's a spot open and that's where I kind of came in. And then we faced Hacksaw Jim Duggan the first night. And on the second night, we faced Sergeant Slaughter. with Jason Wayne, a military dude from OVW that we had jump out of the crowd. He looks like a million bucks too, and you know he can work the match, but the crowd doesn't know. We're in Watertown, New York. Fort Drum is right there, 10th yeah. Mountain Division Rangers, and dude, it's magic. You know what I mean? 750 people going nuts, and everybody else is doing what they got to do, indie style, and there's different things. But now here we are, old school, man. You know, it's moments like that that kicked off my career there, or working with Piper there, or what Tracy Smothers there, that I can, how can I say anything except be grateful for to even be living in that moment, let alone the performance I was able to hopefully give somebody some type of entertainment in the crowd as well. But when I'm in that moment, it doesn't go by me, bro. You know, I'm very, very like, wow, here we are again. Something must be going right. I don't know what to say. So,
I mean, gimmicks like that have always gotten over just because, you know, whether it's, you know, during the Cold War with the Koloffs, you know what I mean? Like they were super over. Vince has done it with Japanese wrestlers. I mean, he's done it with, he's run pretty much every angle that you could that was kind of controversial.
He's not doing it right now. What should he be doing right now in 2020? He's got all the pieces and he's not doing it. This is the professor in me, and we'll raise your action today because I'm sure you're highly intelligent when it comes to booking too. What pieces does he have for controversy that he's not using?
Well, I thought for Retribution when they started, it seemed like an Antifa-like group, and they came in here.
There's one, and they're all related. Keep going. You're right on the right path. If they're Antifa, who's the other group that we have in society?
Oh, the alt-right wingers, the extreme right wingers.
Who would that be? They're off TV because of a tweet last spring.
Oh, the Forgotten Sons.
See, you forgot them.
I did. Yeah, they are forgotten. But no,
Sons, and you have who's the other group? Who's the other group that's in the streets
here?
Three, you got it. Hurt Business.
Oh, the Hurt, really?
They should be BLM. They should be Black Lives Matter. You saw.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because
BLM on.
Yeah.
You don't have to be some militant new.
True.
We are
true,
the nation of domination. Dude, just be the all-star athletes, you know, black men of a generation that have now what that 60s generation, you know, wanted you to be. That's what you are now. Men of status, ballers, the highest paid dudes in Hollywood, real athletes with educations, with military backgrounds, saying to teach the truth to the youth, you know, that you can be a top dude, and we're not going to be clowns anymore. Instead, what do we get in the opening of SmackDown this week? New Day and Street Profits clowning, doing, you know what I mean? Yeah. Where here we have the strong black men that could easily come in and kick the shit out of Retribution like we saw him do. Let's put all three of those groups and really go back to TVMA, put them in a blender, and let's whip the shit out of this thing. You know what I mean? Like, let's really, there's so much you could do with, you put Lacey Evans with the Suns. Yeah. You could have Trump on your show every week with a Trump impersonator. You just open the door and hear his voice in the background. And Lacey Evans is a new press secretary, and they're his security. And they go out and do orders and hits on. Man, it's all right there, bro. But are they going to turn up the volume on that? No, they're just going to do more of the same old shtick. And the Asians are going to be kamikaze fighter pilots and
ninjas and
right, bro. So they're playing at a first grade level. I want to play at a master's degree level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And do you think it's because of the being a publicly traded company, he doesn't want to go down that route again?
How's that working out for you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're making money either way, right?
What was your stock price at? 120 tops.
Yeah.
Now we're at what? 33. Mm-hmm. 33 and a third. So it's time to stop taking chances. And even the stock price, we can talk about that. What was the big news on the wire this morning? The fire department that supposedly had 10 grand in stock, and they were going to sue them for SEC violations because of insider trading. They settled for $39 million with them this morning over 10 grand in stock. Wow. What's going on, man? You know what I mean? And the accounting dude of 19 years left the same week. So does he know some secrets? I would probably say he does. You know, what's really going on when it comes to what they need to do to get back on top? The rating was what on Raw last week? A 1.455?
Yeah.
All-time low. And yep. There's no stakes going into Survivor Series tomorrow. So what's going to happen after Survivor Series? The needle comes back on the record and we reset again. The only thing that was really great this week was on SmackDown with Roman Reigns. And I was burying contract signings 24 hours before, so this is how hypocritical
I am. Yeah, I saw.
The contract signing, Roman, because we didn't flip the table, in the AEW one was like, kind of too. I'm just tired of him. But Roman's acting in this contract signing was a whole new level for him, so... Contract signing aside, the scene work is what really did this, and we've never seen that before at one of these stupid ass things. And nobody signs a contract to wrestle a match. No, nobody ever in the history of professional wrestling has said, I want to wrestle that match, but until I sign a piece of paper, I just can't do it. So it's phony. I hate it. But it is what it is when it came to this week and being one of the best scenes on WWE.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Vampiro. This right here is the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Tune in, get tuned up, get informed, and enjoy the podcast.
RTW Rewind.
I've been a big fan of Roman since he made the switch and had Paul Heyman by his side. You got to see, you know, Paul Heyman's fingerprints are all over that. I mean, to have a guy like him to mentor you and to work you through this and become the heel that you were destined to be. You know, we've said it many times, that should have been done right after he beat Taker at WrestleMania. When he came out that night on Raw the day after and had that hot crowd, and he stood there for 10 minutes and didn't say a word, and then he said, yeah, this is my yard now. They could have been off to the races, and no, they dropped the ball, and they didn't pull the trigger.
You know what I'm excited about? Because I put this out there in the ethos for the last 3 years. This is my idea, because plenty of things I say every month make it to TV, and I'm not getting it before, and that's fine. Yeah. As time goes on, it vilifies me. I was excited to see Tamina, and I know that's a weird thing to say, but
right.
Like, she looks like she's down 15, 25 pounds.
Yeah.
She had her makeup done and her hair right. And then they jobbed her out for Natty, who should have lost on SmackDown, because Natty's whole thing is bitching and being complaining. Instead, they put Natty over on her, and now we have the team. It's better for Natty to lose there and go crazier into her game of being nobody wants to deal with her. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then she could run in during the match and try and cost the finish. That's how I would have booked it. That's how the smart psychology is.
Right.
They have her as a bitch, and now she's smiling and has her hands, and they were supposed to go, yay, Natty, where the scene before, everyone's like, oh my God, shut up with the complaining.
Yeah.
So they're from one scene to the next, the continuity and playing out the game is trash. But my point is with Tamina, she's getting herself ready, I think, for an opportunity, because they're finally going to do, and they're already into it to some degree, the Samoan Sopranos. I've talked about this on Russo Brand. He hates that I call Paul Heyman Paul Hagen, because Godfather 2 is such a classic and protected film . Yeah. I love the Sopranos. It's my favorite show in the history of television. I've watched every season over 40 times. I break it down, every line, every symbolic thing, every callback to the mob movies they steal from. I love all that shit. And now we're getting close to forming up the Samoan Mafia. And dude, there's a lot there we could do, from Rikishi, from the dude in MLW, Tamina, Naya, Usos, obviously Roman. They brought Afa and Zika in. I thought that was a dumb thing to do during COVID, but at least they're in the storyline.
Yeah.
You could, there's a lot there, man. There's so much meat on the bone there that I think the Samoan Mafia is the absolute way to go with this.
And they would destroy everybody.
You know what I mean? He just sits on high. Everybody else does his bidding. girls included, they're shaking people down for whatever reasons, for opportunities. They're making people do things and take other people out for them. And you see it as all part of the chess moves. Now we can move two or three other players in a world. Roman sits back protected, and it's not till he has to move out and really just do one match where you're like, oh, the Godfather's coming out, guns blazing, they're going to put a hit on somebody. Like when Tony kills somebody on The Sopranos, it means a lot more for his psychopath to come out than it does to have his hitters do it. You know what I mean? When they're going to take down a guy. So we get to see all those little worlds spinning inside of the bigger world of the Samoan Mafia. Man, if we play to the height of our intelligences and the height of the scene, which we kind of did the last couple times here, man, between him and Jay and this contract signing, I think maybe on his own he hired an acting coach because he was so much more natural Friday for the first time in his career that I'd seen him. That I hadn't seen that side of a performance from him ever. So I'm interested to see where it's going to go. However, they could fuck up a wet dream over there. So, you know, that's just how it is.
That is true. And do you think that would be building something down the line with The Rock coming back? Since, I mean, if you want to look at lineage.
Isn't that it, right?
That's, you know, Rock that's being the guy, you know what I mean?
I think that's absolutely it. You want, you know, he's the top dude, and there's other big dogs in the mob, right? There's five families or whatever inside of it. They're at the end of the day, they're all Italian, or in this case, Samoan. you know, I think that's definitely it. And Rock's daughter has been training, and she wants a shot. So that's just good business to maybe introduce her, same as Aaliyah with the Mysterios was. You know, there's a lot of stuff we can do here that's real because it's believable that it's in the family. And when you're playing with those types of relationships back and forth, and you can, and they're comfortable with each other, it's not two performers who have to find the chemistry. They've been playing, they've been growing up, they know each other, they can even reference things that are real, and you're going to see real emotion take over. We could get some brilliant stuff if we have the real dude. I would start being like, hey, can I get David Chase on the phone real quick? We need you as a consultant. Why not, bro? At this point, if Fox gave you $1 billion, your ass better be doing something to make sure, okay, we got something. How do we? Because right now they got a spark. They don't have a full fire blaze going. You know what I mean? Right. There's a way to bring people back from a 1.7 to a 2.5 rating, 800,000 with this storyline. If you did it right, there's no real other draws on the show on anything in NXT and Raw. So in whatever that comes out to be 6 hours of WWE TV every week, there's 20 to 30 minutes that are actually somebody needs to tune in to see that. And we need to make all 6 hours that. But like I say, we got to crawl before we can walk, you know?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Now, could you see something like maybe getting a Mexican family together too and kind of have those two major like lineages in wrestling at it? You know, get Rey, get Dominic, get Aaliyah, get, you know, the Lucha House Party, a bunch of other guys, you know.
Why not? Maybe, why not do Lucha's there? And I would, before I would do that, I would get them together in that other world because Latinos play a big part in the build the wall stuff, right, of the Trump thing. So that's where I'd go with that, with Forgotten Sons to establish it. And then you spin out of there after you've built the Samoans on high. They try and get the Latinos and Mexicans to do their dirty work for them, and that ends up badly where they get in, and then there's heat with inside of that. You know, there's so much you could take from every mob movie and make it kind of familiar, but not. You know what I mean? Make it their own, because mob movies are primarily Italian films, and now we have Samoans and Mexicans. I mean, that's awesome, bro. There's so much great culture that you could put on top of that that would be very cool, instead of coming back to give somebody a stink face and, you know, eat raw chicken, which is probably what they'll have them do, you know.
That probably will. They'll have some kind of Thanksgiving fucking brawl or whatever with catering and everything.
Dude, Lana's going through a buffet table, homie.
Oh, easily.
Right now. There's no way you're not going to get there's no way Vince and Bruce are passing on a fat joke for Nia with the buffet and putting Lana through it that way. You're absolutely going to get that on Sunday. And if they don't, it's because I've said it on podcast and they're like, oh, we called us out and we can't do it now.
You mentioned Natty earlier. What do you think is the reason why she hasn't really gotten over and gotten the respect that she should have?
Man, I don't know, because I have so much respect for the Hart family style and the way she wrestles. And yeah, dude, I don't know if it's something backstage where they just Vince gets tired of playing with his toys. He gets excited about a toy and he puts it on the shelf, but she's such a technician that there's no way you can cut her based on legacy alone. Her husband's a great talent too. You know what I mean? She's good on your reality shows as the crazy one too, kind of. The stuff with her sister is sexy, bizarre. I don't know what's going on over there with them in lingerie slapping each other in the tits. I'm like, hey, do what you got to do. I'll watch that all day.
Right.
But let's get more of that. Like, if that's what they want to do on their free time, let's rib the OnlyFans thing. Bring in your sister who likes to get down with workers, apparently, and let's get naughty with it. Let's do some after-hour shit. Sex sells. We're at a 1.45. Get your sister's big gimmicks out and let's slap them around and get some fucking viewers back here, man, because if that's what we got to do, let's do it, you know?
Right.
They had Kelly stripping on ECW.
Yep.
The pendulum swung so far away when it became the cool thing, because Triple H and Steph had little kids and Shane had kids and Vince is a grandpa. That's got nothing to do with anything of like, we're changing the product. That's like, we've got kids now. We're interested in Barney. So everything in our house is PG. So everything in your house has got to be PG too. So we swung that way. Let's swing it back to Jerry Springer and girls jumping on trampolines, man show, you know, Ziggy Zoggy. Let's get back to that type of stuff, man. Like, and here's the opportunity to do it, because that's going to bring back from the demo god, the most sought after 18 to 49 year old demo that's tired of being called whatever, you know, in the streets and pussy hat wearing stuff and all that kind of shit, man. They went that far with it. Let's get ahead of the curve and come back with it, because that's just the way humanity is. It's a ever changing swing back and forth.
Well, I mean, you know, being a fan as long as I have, that it all starts with the kids. I mean, we got hooked back in the 80s. And Vince has always kind of done that in cycles, where, you know, you had Hogan in the 80s, you had, you know, he went through The Rock and Stone Cold and the Attitude Era and all that, but then he went to John Cena. John Cena became the guy for the kids, and he kind of tried to push Sheamus and Roman Reigns towards the kids, but that's how you hook him in. So realistically, 10 years from now, maybe he would go back to that edgy product, or do you think he just kind of doesn't want to do it, and it would take him maybe either passing away, God forbid, or being taken out, that they changed their programming? Do you think as long as Vince is around, he won't do that?
I think it's not till all the kids are teenagers and talking about sex and things that are online.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's what's in his own house of like, okay, they're not little kids anymore. We can say fuck around them again. You know what I mean? Like, and until that happens, until they're comfortable with being that in their lives, then the rest of us don't get that, man. That's just the power of a family running things. Whatever their perspective is, that's what's going to be sifted through the product. And that's totally wrong. Yeah. There's nothing right about that at all, but that's the cold truth.
Yeah, no, for sure. When did you first become a wrestling fan? I always like to try to get like an entry point from when I have new guests on, but what's your earliest memories of watching wrestling on TV?
Well, my dad, who I was just with, was a state champion, New York super heavyweight wrestler for high school and college. And he would just tune guys up, and I would hear about it when I was a little kid. Like, you know, because my dad, had me like when he was 25. So, you know, it wasn't, and we live in a small town. So a lot of guys that he would wrestle with, he held track and field records for like 25 years in my high school for shot put discus. He was just a beast of a farm boy. Nice. So, yeah. So he would, like, you look at his wrestling picture and he looks like he looks older than the coach. His hairline's back years in high school and shit. So he was like a man by 10th grade, you know? Yeah. So he was just tuning fucking guys up left, and they couldn't fuck with his strength. So people would be like, dude, your dad's was one of the best wrestlers I ever saw, when I'm like 5 and 6 years old. So I'm like looking at my dad, and my dad was an amateur pro lumberjack too. So my dad's like the Vince McMahon of the pro lumberjack world. So all those guys you see on Steel Timber Sports Series, he runs this is the first year in 43 3 years he hasn't done it, but because of COVID, but he runs the world champion of lumberjack series in Boonville, New York, 46,000 people. So I always see my dad as a leader. He's a fire chief in my hometown too.
He does everything. He's like the all American guy, right?
Right. So what, and he's mad humble too, man. And that's why people are like, why are you able to lead? I've just seen this shit my whole life. You know what I mean? And to be the prince to him, people expect a lot from me on, are you going to have it handed to you? Or are you going to fucking dig that hole and show how you sweat? And my dad's a farm boy. He's a, your ass going to get in there and learn how to work hard. So you work smart because you don't want to work hard all day long. He used to put me in the county and stuff with these goofs who like were guys who were going to be there for their whole life. And he goes, you want to work with those guys? You want to do what you want to go and do what you're doing now, I guess, you know? So I know how to do that, but to take it back, people would say, you kicked the shit out of me. So at that time is 83, right? I was born in 77. So that's 83. Hogan's on the rise. Andre, red hot, WrestleMania to a 6-year-old. And my dad's taking us on lumberjack tours. And these guys are just as big as WWE guys, just as big, all fucking monster behemoth men. And I'm thinking my dad could kick the shit out of Hogan. And at the time, he might have been able to, dude. My dad was a monster. And, I just thought my dad was a pro wrestler like that. I don't understand amateur wrestling at 5 years old. So he would let me watch it, but he hated it. And he told me that he's like, I don't like this shit. And I was like, why, dude? You were a wrestler? I thought he was. My mom made me take him to he had him take me to Saturday Night Main Event. We were 7th row in Syracuse. And it was Killer Khan versus Hulk Hogan in the ring. And we're right against the gate. And Andre the Giant comes down and stops right next to my dad. And I can still see it in my mind's eye as clear as day. It's like the evolutionary scale. Little me, my fucking dad, and then Andre. And my dad's hands are like stone. His fucking fingers are real big around too. And I remember seeing Andre's hands, and Andre's fingers were another 3 inches longer than my dad's hands. And I was like, what the fuck? they can play with John Cena to little kids. It's things like that. It's the moment of, oh my God, the great Khali to a 6-year-old, Andre the Giant to a 6-year-old that hooks you. Yeah. Like once you see that spectacle and you're like, I'm in the middle of magic. I was there for Rock Hogan in Toronto. I've never felt anything like that in a room. I've been in some crazy performances, man. Big time performances places, not even on stage, but watching. I've never felt energy like that. And when they can, WWE is one of the few companies that has the ability to create those moments on a regular basis and capture that lightning in a bottle. And when you do, it's not about week to week TV. It's about setting up to a payoff where somebody's live and they feel that energy. You got them. I've never done heroin, but I can't imagine it's stronger than heroin. Improv is a drug that performance rush or being in the ring and wrestling is what we are all chasing all the time. So when I saw Andre next to my dad, dude, that was it for me. I might have missed a couple because I'm between age 6 and 8. But since age 8, I haven't missed a week of wrestling in my life since then.
No kidding. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I started a little bit later. I'm a year older than you, but I didn't watch until about 88. My first memory, and I've covered this on the show, was turning on the TV and watching Hulk celebrate his first title win. And he was backstage with Andre and me and Gene, and his parents were there. They poured champagne all over him. So, but for whatever reason, that didn't really hook me. But what did hook me was the Mega Powers. Like when I saw Hogan and Macho Man first together, and just the electricity that they had and the charisma that both those guys had together. And I'm like, oh, what is this? So I started to watch every week from there, and to see the build of that storyline for that year and a half or period. I mean, they set the seeds pretty early at WrestleMania 4, and even SummerSlam before that. But that has to be, in my opinion, the greatest storyline that they ever put out.
It's up there, man. I gotta say, top five, no doubt. And that's that electricity of two performers at their peak, you know, ready to go, and they know what's up. And again, that's making that weird chemistry that people are like, oh, and draw. Now let's go back to those models and try and find that magic again. How can we start doing something long-term? Instead, we have this weird family that somehow went from that to more about putting ribs and petty things and paybacks on their TV show and sacrificing those moments for an F you on Lana. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Not that I'm some big Lana, you know, like Lana's number one fan. I mean, it is Happy Lana Day to you guys out there. You know, there's just precious time, and we've wasted 9 weeks on doing this, you know.
And not just her, but, you know, Mickie James, and they did to the Revival, you know, have them shaving each other's backs in the showers and all the slapstick shit that they went through. And, you know, they had a guy like Santino who was fantastic. And no. he could have done more in that role, but they kind of put the kibosh on it. I mean, that guy was over.
Dude, you don't got to tell me. That's my dog, man. Right. I kind of, when he was at OVW and was going out, that's when I was coming right in there. And he's part of the core, absolutely. And a guy who went to OVW on his own dime and made it, dude. And people don't even know that the dude is a legit Canadian Olympic level judo master.
Yeah.
He don't get to show any of that in WWE, right? He puts a sock on his hand and wakow, like, gives you that. And I would rather see him do that and make money instead of taking bump after bump after bump. That's working smart and work. Yeah. Hey, everybody else is a big tough guy. I'm going to put a sock on my hand and and dance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Paycheck's the same and your back feels a lot better. His able to get down on the floor and play with his new baby and his neck isn't killing him and shit like that. That guy's a smart dude, man. Tons of respect for him. So it's all about how you play your part, and sometimes you're the B and C player in the lower level storylines. I've been that. I've been in popcorn in many shitty six-man matches, but if you do small business inside of your world, eventually that world will elevate all the way to the highest level of the storyline because we're taking them on a journey that they want to go on. Like, Tony Soprano's the top character, but I love Paulie, and the world's going around with Paulie. The episode in the Pine Barrens with the Russian, if you know Sopranos, is the best episode of the Sopranos that there is, and it's Paulie's storyline in the middle. So even mid-card characters, as you play out their psychology, their heroic ride or downfall, the downfall or the top moment is going to get there, and the spotlight's going to be on you. So it's all about long-term business and serving the scene instead of serving yourself, you know? And unfortunately, we're not doing a lot of that where we have opportunity to do those little juicy mid-card things that could influence the big world as just like the big world's got the main storyline's got their thing going on, and we have these sub-storylines. And if they collide just for a minute in a Venn diagram, we have a sweet spot in there that some magical moments can happen. But if we don't take care of those worlds, we're never even going to get that opportunity to create something in that, oh, that was awesome feeling. You know what I mean? Because the audience is investing their time in your product and you're just kind of giving them piecemealed stuff. You're giving them ninjas versus Vikings versus, okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy, the coach from the WWE. 20 years, 2 decades in the greatest business that the world has ever seen. Pro wrestling. Now, there are very few wrestling podcasts out there that I like, but this one I love. I love the name. I love the personalities. I love the content. The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast, that's where you're at right here. Follow. Subscribe. I do. Enjoy the show. I'm the coach. Till next time. Roll it.
RTW Rewind.
So the 24/7 title could have meant something and could have been like a hardcore title when they had the 24/7 rule, but it just became comedy fodder. And there's so much more that they
standard. Why isn't it on Shelton Benjamin? And why isn't that the standard of wrestling? Of no one's going to jump Shelton Benjamin in a comedy way. You know what I mean? That dude will tune you up real quick. So let's see him tune some people up.
Yep. And I love Truth. Don't get me wrong. Like, Truth is amazing. Like, he's this great guy.
His heart, you know.
Yeah. But it's just unfortunate with the good ideas they could have had. And, you know,
sorry, I hate to cut you off.
No, it's fine.
Right on it. We talk about Hurt Business being BLM and Empowered Black Men. That's where we can break Truth out to bring him back to Ron Killings, a phenomenal impact talent who has athleticism. He could be the most athletic guy in wrestling, yeah. Dude, even at his age now. The guy is just awesome. And, you know, why can't we go back to that and have MVP say, dude, enough of this clown bullshit. You've been doing this for 20 years. Don't you want the shot that you're supposed to have at the – and Brock wanted to work with him. You know what I mean? Bro? Yep. Like, don't you want the shot you're supposed to have? And, like, let's see him drop that mask for the first time of crazy and little Johnny and being the empowered black man that's, you know, got the respect of the fans, and now he's getting his shot. Can you, the same as when Kofi went over.
Yeah.
Could you imagine doing an empowered push like that with Killings? How great would that be for him to close out his career like that?
Yeah, absolutely.
But instead we're doing little Johnny and, you know, the 24/7 hashtag 48 Route 66. Okay, bro. Okay. That's where we are. And he deserves more than that. After 20 years in the biz, he deserves more than that.
And he's still loved. He's still popular, no matter what. Like, nobody has a bad thing to say about him.
Because that's why his heel turn will mean more.
Right.
As loved you are as a babyface, when you turn heel, it'll mean that much more. And then when you go and ask for forgiveness as a heel, they're going to love you, because if you do, you're only as hot as a baby as hated as you are as a heel. Yeah. So you got to put a lot of heat on a guy, or a guy who's a top baby when he turns. Man, that's what you're really looking for. And him turning would be great.
Now, do you think that's what they're trying to do with Roman, to get him white hot as a heel, as a monster heel, and then to finally get him to do the switch and try to get him over as a baby like they tried to do in the past, but the fans weren't digging it? Do you think he has to go through this to finally reach the level that they wanted him to reach at one point?
I think it's him doing what he does best, which is being a cool-ass dude, man. Yeah. Like, don't F with this dude. Just let him be empowered of who he is, instead of trying to be whatever it was they wanted him to be for all these years, man. Didn't you finally hear his song? You know what I mean? You could finally hear it. I don't know if you watched the SmackDown taping, but for one of the first times he was finally finding his voice. Yeah. And that's the short, I'm not trying to say he's, you know, a lackluster performer. He's been a main eventer, looks wise and whatever. Absolutely.
Oh, he looks fantastic. I mean, he is your picture perfect guy of a leading man.
Dude, every MILF out there and single mom and even married mom, as soon as that guy comes out, you know when he comes out how you got him, because if you're backstage listening, when it's a dude that is going to crush people and people like him, you hear all the guys. When Roman comes out, when Cena comes out, when anybody sexy like that, you hear the little kids and you hear the women, you hear the higher pitch of the dude, and that's going to be your merch money. So that's who you go with, because that's sex appeal, right? But I just think stay out of his way, and less is way more. Let him call the shots and let the underlings have their scenes. And do not overexpose him here, man. And I think you got to put him over on Drew. Drew can take the loss as champ. It's not like he's going to lose his title. You know what I mean? But the Roman Reigns storyline is the only thing with any teeth in it. So you have to keep it going, you know? So we'll see what they do, but there isn't much stakes on any. If they didn't do that scene on SmackDown, woof, there would have been zero stakes in Survivor Series, man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with Taker, you know, supposedly being his last appearance, obviously that, you know, you never know. But, you know, they're obviously trying to pop some more people to get the network and to watch that, because it's going to be his last hurrah. So,
is it? And then next week we're going to bring back ECW again and squeeze a couple more pennies out of that. What else are we going to, right? But it's the last one until the next time.
But I mean, it's always their fallback plan. Just like when they have, Raw reunion and shit like that, when they try to bring back the old timers to pop a number, because those were the last guys that were truly over and quite possibly even bigger than the company. We know Vince doesn't want to make those guys like Cena again that were bigger than the company. John Cena's a dying breed. He's probably going to be the last guy you'll ever see to be that big in that company.
And how's that working out for him?
No, I know, but that's just the way it is. Like, people, the marquee is WWE. WrestleMania sells itself. You're not going to see Roman Reigns. You're not going to see Randy Orton. You're going to see WrestleMania. And that's the way Vince has always wanted it.
And that's fine. The point of the sign stuff, it's things like that that to shine the brand and the brand and this, like, that's what's killed them. That's very short-sighted. And to overscript these guys who dreamed of being a wrestler, and now you're putting the words of a 74-year-old man in their mouths when they're 20 and 30-year-olds, it's just so overscripted, and you're not getting any organic moments whatsoever. You're getting D-level, middle school-level acting that's probably written on the day of. How many times have we heard from these writers of, we wrote all weekend and then on Sunday we had everything submitted for finals and then he scrapped the whole goddamn thing? Well, if you're going to do that on the day of TV, you're going to get what you get.
Yep.
You know, and a great booker, Vince McMahon, 1983, had 4 months laid out, not 4 hours before the show. Mm. And it wasn't Hogan's going to say this and Mach is going to say that. It was, all right, fellas, we're going to do this and we're going to get there. And I want you to just go in there and we'll do a couple takes and we'll see what we get. Like, I want the real you. I want what's really going to come out of you. Let me tell you the stakes, and you know how you would react better than I would. And if I think I can get more out of you, or if you're giving me a reaction that you think is right, but I want something else, I'll be like, that's good. Try it like this one time. And then maybe that'll send them as a direct. That's what a great director does. You just guide your performers a little bit. The performance is already in them. It's for you to pull it out of them, not for you to put the performance into them. Now I'm trying to get you to imitate me imitating you. And that will work out. You know what I mean? So, no, I want to say, here's your strengths. Here's what I love about you. Here's what's awesome in this scene and what I need out of your character. Or for the first time, we need to see your character, who is usually turned up. We need to see him introspective, and won't that draw the audience in if you've been turned up the whole time, you know? So that's really, and then once they're in that space, they might be uncomfortable. Uncomfortable is an emotion, and that's a good thing to play with, man. So it's how we're setting these things up for our characters to shine. But really, every character is two people, Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard at the end of the day. None of the characters you're seeing on TV, except for maybe Randy Orton, are themselves.
I think they gave Randy the leeway in the last couple of years to be himself, because you used to see him do the scripted promos in the past and he'd forget his lines or he'd fuck up and people called him Randy Borton because his promos sucked, because I don't think they were letting him do what he wanted to do. And now in the last year and a half, we've finally seen that guy that we always wanted in Randy, because he had all the tools.
I think they just gave up on trying to pull it out of them. I don't think it's anything like getting it. They're just like, fuck it, man. We tell him to say, what do you want in the promo? Just tell him to say RKO and let him do what the fuck he wants. Like,
right.
That's the conversation at this point. Instead of like, Randy, man, this is important and this could be a legacy making promo. Yeah, sure it is. You know, like, okay. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we could still do in there, but he's a hustler, Rip Rogers guy. So he gets it, he gets it fully.
Now, do you think they're overly scripted now because you have more of, the quote indie guys or the ROH guys or the guys that were always great ring performers and never really cut compelling or great promos? Do you think maybe Vince didn't trust the younger wrestlers in the last few years, and that's kind of why they went to so heavy scripting? Because, bro, can you imagine Roddy Piper having a writer hand him shit 20 years ago, or Hulk Hogan or Macho Man or Mr. Perfect or anybody of those guys? Like, of course, it never happened, but those are different breeds of guys. Do you think either one, the guys don't have that ability now, or Vince just doesn't trust them to go out on their own and cut a promo and learn who the character is? If you're reading lines from somebody else that they wrote for you that don't know shit about your character, and you're the one that has it in your head where you know what you want to do, like Bray Wyatt, do you think Vince just doesn't trust these guys?
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. And that class of 2012... that got over from Backyarders into ROH into WWE, and they tore down OVW's status, and they made FCW, and then it was just like, here's your 30-second cue, here's your go home, here's five, yay, you did it, hit your pose when you enter, what's your catchphrase, like the factory system of making stars that way.
Yeah.
It just started cranking out crap, performers who aren't ready to really handle anything and or have any character development behind them.
Right.
We gotta correct that. What do they need? They need advanced improvisation. If they're going to hire 19-year-olds, 20 to 25-year-olds who have no world experience and didn't really work the indies and come up, because you're talking the 80s. Why are those guys all good? They weren't 19 and 20 getting signed and going developmental. They were coming out of working territories.
Yep.
They had to know how to work crowds. They had to know how to. Now you got people who've never even been in independent arena, you know, to learn how to learn their craft on TV.
Yeah.
Because they looked good, or they came from the NFL, or they did what have you, you know. So there's just a big difference of being a journeyman wrestler versus going to wrestling college and you graduate right to TV, you know. That's not learning your craft and paying your dues, even if you think because you work the Florida NXT route that's paying your dues. It's not. If you're not driving 10 hours from New York to Chicago, driving 6 to the upper Canada, if you're not driving 12 down to Kentucky, you're not doing shit. You know what I mean? You're really not. So, not saying you're not doing shit, all bumps count, but that's the difference in being and living as a performer versus being some cookie cutter thing that hits the Randy Orton pose because that worked for us then. Let's repeat that and just start stamping them out one after the other. And you could see that in FCW, how they'd give all those guys some weird gay porn name type thing. And make dudes with their beard shave their head and beard. And then once they're like, hey, you're not really getting over as a clean baby face. Yeah, no shit, because I played a dark character on the indies for 10 years. And they're like, you should grow a beard. You think so?
Yeah.
You know, and I can name three guys that applies to. So, you know, there's all those mistakes in developmental where they should be learning how to improvise. They should be going and doing business all over the place, whether it's UK and whatnot, and sending them out there to get that feeling of the crowd to give them more real experiences instead of just being shined by WWE. Because they don't want to make stars, but until they do, nothing is going to change. The CM Punk pipe bomb promo probably put a big, you know, chop in that too, because we were doing all phony shit at that time, and he just got to come out and say what was really on the sheets. It wasn't anything that cutting edge, but people put it over as mind blowing. But really, it's just because everything else we were seeing was trash, you know.
Yeah.
I also survived 1991 to 1995 WWE, and I didn't miss a week of that. So I've been through some of the roughest times, but right now it's just them. They got to stop messing with their baby faces. They got cool guys. They had Moxley. Couldn't use them. They don't know how to make James Dean. And now Moxley's on AEW booking his own shit, and he's James Dean 2020, and it's working. You know, like, you got to stay out of the way of Roman Reigns. You got to stay out of the way of Drew McIntyre. Do they? Nope. They give him a steamer trunk off of a pirate ship with his Braveheart shit in it and a sword that he sticks in the ground, and now pyro goes off. Okay, we're screwed. We're back to some dumbass stuff here.
Yep.
You know, like, they just don't know how to stay out of these cool guys' way. Cesaro should be on top.
Yeah.
Not even in the picture, bro. You know what I mean? Miro could have transitioned out of being the Russian thing, but again, they killed themselves on social media, and the cold hand of pettiness takes its toll on them. So that's really my biggest thing, is they need to just empower the guys who are cool, and they need to really get back to letting people find their voices. And the only way to do that, in my opinion, is through advanced improvisation training.
You know, and they tried to make an effort at it, you know, to build their characters when they had Dusty there, you know, doing promo school and all that. And
everybody says that, but I don't see that, bro.
It didn't translate, obviously. Yeah.
Just because Dusty is, I mean, he's phenomenal. No, I'm not taking nothing away from Dusty or Dustin. Oh, I think Dustin's better than Dusty, to be honest with you. Gold Dust is one of my favorite performers of all
time.
That's
fair. Yeah, that's fair.
On a level so above everybody else, dude.
Yep.
Dusty was like, yeah, he wants to bring it out of you, and it's positive, but that was like a lot of people's got the anointing from Dusty, and they went on their way, and Dusty kind of did that for a while, and that's good, because it gives performers confidence.
Yeah.
If somebody comes to me, I go, yeah, you're kicking ass, and they go, like, all right, now I got this legend told me that when Piper kissed me on my head and said, "You fucking killed it, man." Like, I was like, "Oh, that was fucking great." Yeah. You know, like to get that anointing. But that doesn't mean just because Dusty says in Nomine Patris that you're a fucking brilliant performer all of a sudden, you know?
Very true.
And a lot of people got that. That fucking stamp, Sasha Banks got that, and a lot of, and we've seen so many fucking just brutal performances there. So, you know, that that's taking away nothing from the Rhodes legacy, but when you're in NXT and FCW to be a babysitter and pat the kids on the head, and you didn't shit your pants today, good job, here's a cookie, that was part of his job too. So let's not, you know, romanticize it that just because he said it, then he really meant it.
Right. That's true. That's a fair point. You know, you mentioned 91 through 95 WWF. I think I'd rather have that now, to be quite honest.
Be careful what you wish for, bro. The Repo Man, the fucking Mantar, the, you know, Coco and Owen together, which wasn't bad.
Hey, I loved High Energy. Come on, man. They were great. But pulling the fights up because they were nine hearts and they didn't fit. That's fucking beautiful, man.
Yeah, I mean, but that level of creative was pretty
bad,
bro. So, you know, there's plenty to look back and laugh at now from the Godwins. I love the Hogpen match with Triple H, man. That was a fucking brutal match. Not a lot of people sell for that one, Henry Godwin and Triple H, but that was. But we're getting all that. Oh my God, he's got a pill. Can I? You know, oh no. Oh my. He's got the slop bucket. Slop bucket. Yeah. Like, are we going to get back to that? Maybe. I don't know. But
hey, we had Sunny, though. I mean, hey, God bless
her. You can probably have her now for the right price as well.
That's fair.
Hey, this is Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. It's amazing to me that turtles have the ability to speak, let alone host wrestling podcasts. I guess that's what makes them rad.
RTW Rewind.
As we wrap it up here, and I do appreciate you taking time out to speak with me. Do you see AEW really making a difference when it's all said and done? Do you think they're on the right path? I know obviously they're new, they're a startup. I mean, Christ, it's only been a year. They have so much more room to go, but I personally have always been one that, you know, the boys shouldn't be booking the territory, and there should be somebody like a Vince McMahon to kind of bounce stuff off of. And I don't know if Tony is that guy to do that with, because he hasn't been in the business. Do you think they need to put some more pieces in the right places to kind of get moving in the right direction and try to build their brand to become a, I don't say a force to be reckoned with, because I don't know if anybody will ever be able to compete with WWE just because of the fact that they've been around that long and they have that stranglehold on the market. But where do you see AEW, say, 5 years from now?
Yeah, I hope they're open still, and I hope that he has a big brother figure. Tony Khan obviously loves wrestling,
yeah,
you know, enough to link up with those guys and put the money behind it, and his dad's got the money. So as a pet project, what is it to them? I mean, we're talking on a level that you and I don't can only dream of operating at, you know? So, but when it comes to psychology and booking, he needs a big brother, and I'm sure he's got it in Cody and Jericho, but some stuff I see still needs to get reined in, you know, like a lot of good happens, but then right after that, they'll do what should happen next week, right on top of the scene. Uh-huh. Like, you got to keep it simple, stupid, KISS theory, right? For the fans. And if you start splitting focus, then the stories are harder to digest. This is just wrestling booking and psychology. And he doesn't know this because he's been a fan, but he hasn't gone taking the bumps, had Rip tell him he's a stupid SOB and some mistakes. You know, you got to make the mistakes to learn from them. There's only one way to learn, and that's the hard way, really. Thankfully his bank account can usually handle it.
Right.
But it's things like a payoff on a title. And then like, let's go to Darby Allin wins from Cody. Right.
Yep.
That's the moment of the baby face. You beat me. I'm respectful. And here it is, bro, your moment. Let's go off as baby faces. What do? Right on top of them. Send the heels. We didn't get any chance to digest Darby as a new champ, that feeling of, yeah, dude, this guy's a new talent and let's see what he can do. Nope, let's kick the shit out of him right away, put him through a car and go to break his arm. Like, you just killed that moment, which was the big moment to start a new thing. Next week, Darby could be there to be coming out to give his speech about being the champion. You jump him right in the entryway, and announcers, what are they doing here? Da, da, da. And he doesn't get to talk then. We get robbed of these moments because of the shotgun booking that he doesn't understand. And he's done it a lot. He did it again this week. Serena versus Thunder Rosa. The best wrestling.
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. The best
wrestling that's going on right now on any show, hands down.
Yep.
We have...
And I've been very critical of the women's division. But, I mean, that was phenomenal.
How could you not be? It's been really rough, and people have been getting hurt. Now, this is going to set a standard. I said this on the Rip Rogers podcast, or on our AEW when Rip was on this week. Is Serena's wrestling going to set a new standard across the board? Because Bayley and them... we're marking out for her on Twitter saying they wanted a dream match against her. Well, you had her for 3 years. Why aren't you? So it's only a matter of time before Bayley and Sasha start wrestling like Serena, which is how they should be wrestling.
Yeah.
And so should Natty, because Natty can do all that shit too, man.
Yep.
And we're not getting to see it. So why not? So Serena could be setting the bar, not just for women's wrestling, but for wrestling across the board, right? Because that's how good she is.
Yeah.
That aside, Britt Baker does the run in, they do the jump up, they do the spot, and then, you know, kills Thunder Rosa on the outside. They go to the back, and then they wrestle some more. That should have been the finish right there. So right there, they're not really getting all the business done the right way. But then at the end of that match, Thunder Rosa jumps out of the ring, and Britt Baker's at ringside and starts kicking the shit out of her. Well, Britt Baker just snuck to the back. You know, why would she come back out and like, you didn't know it was me that beat you up 5 minutes ago? Like, next week should be Britt Baker, or Thunder Rosa is on the hunt for Britt Baker, and Britt Baker, who does character phenomenally, should be shooting her pants and putting Reba as the buffer in between her, right?
Yeah.
There's so much there there's so much meat we're leaving on the bone, because Serena going over for the title, it should have been her beauty shot. Instead, the business, that's the business. Serena going over and staying over, and then the spin-out business of whatever it's going to be with Britt and Rosa, or it was going to be Britt and Serena, we could have done that too. But shotgunning that, it cheats you out of a week of TV, and it lessens the finish of that match. They do that kind of every other week in multiple segments.
Yeah.
So,
because, I mean, you still have time to get heat. You don't, you know what I mean? You don't have to do it right now. No. Let it breathe. Let people, like you said, let people digest everything, and you get your heat later. But yeah, I don't know, man.
You're looking forward to, oh, Thunder Rosa is going to be hot next week. Britt Baker is going to be on. Britt Baker better watch her ass next week. And we know that we could start the show with Thunder Rosa trashing the girls' locker room or whatever. You know what I mean? And
yep.
He gets a hold of it. Like, that's all the beautiful character stuff. And unfortunately, a lot of their character stuff that gets done on TV, and my staff is like, oh, it's because they did it on Being the Elite.
How many people are watching that? I mean, compared to,
One match, or let's cut 3 minutes off of each match, or 1 minute off of each match. That'll give us 5 or 6 extra minutes. And let's take those character points and pieces and put them on TV, because that's another thing that we're missing a lot of times. And my guys, well, they did it on there. Well, they didn't even reference it, nor did they even show a small highlight clip of it, you know? And story's important. When they did, I think it was 45 minutes of wrestling and an hour of story, the rating was like 1 million, whatever it was, 6-8 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's been down to 850, 750 in there. And they've done an hour of wrestling, 35, 40 minutes of character. They have the roadmap. This guy's an analytics genius and expert, right? He's into it. They don't know. They didn't see that in their model, that 60-40 is the formula, but it's 60% creative, 40% wrestling. He bows down to their audience for 10 people on Twitter who go, you said there'd be more wrestling. You're right. Get more wrestling. Give everybody 5 more minutes. Yeah. And then you feel that in their matches of like, oh, we should have gone home right there, but they want more wrestling. And we missed the edit, we missed the pin, and we ended a lower note because we wear our audience out with that. Need to stop selling for those people in the scrum who ask them a question and they switch it back to 60-40 wrestling. Can't be that way, bro. That's their biggest issue to overcome, to get over a million and stay over a million. Here's the other one. Stop being on Wednesday. Who gives a shit about a war with WWE developmental? Just start calling them WWE developmental and lessen their brand, right?
Yep.
If their rating is 1.455 on Raw, that means there's 1,455,000 people watching. How many people are watching NXT this week? 670,000. How many were watching AEW? 800,000 to 850,000. Add them together, 1.46 million people. That's all that's left in wrestling.
That's it.
So if they wanted to compete with WWE, they should either go to Thursday or Tuesday, and then they'd be hurting Impact, which I don't want to hurt Impact because that's the best show on wrestling out of all of them, to be honest with you.
Absolutely.
So if they went to Thursday, they might be over a million all the time. So what is it worth staying in this stupid little war with NXT to go back and forth and be like, we're the demo gods? Would you rather have that and win by 100,000? Or would you rather win by 1.3 million to and NXT might be over a million too, but at least we're getting fucking more eyes on the total product, and you might then be able to overtake Raw or SmackDown. But where they are right now, Sun Tzu, Art of War, would be laughing at them, bro. They'd be like, what are you doing in here? Like, somebody give this guy a copy of Sun Tzu, or give him it's on YouTube. Just go listen to it. There's a lot of strategies that they could pull that would get them over a million and keep them over a million. And I don't know why we're not doing it.
I mean, I've said it for months. Well, yeah, 1.4, 1.5 is their ceiling for both shows combined. Whenever they were unimposed because of whatever else was on the channels, NXT did better and AEW did better because there's more people that are dedicated to watching that one show. They don't have to flip back and forth, so they don't have to DVR or anything like that. And we saw when they go unimposed, the numbers go up. But when you put them together, it's going to be the same people watching no matter what you do, no matter who's on the show.
But you're selling for NXT. What are you really doing? You are lowering your ability to charge more for advertising because you're under a million. What sounds better? We have 850,000 viewers advertise with us. We have over a million viewers advertise with us. Exactly. Like, you know, like that alone
should be that. It should be that easy, but it's not.
That's biz 101, man. And I don't understand why our egos are standing in the way. And that needs to be said in a vice president's meeting.
Now, do you think it's because Tony was a mark for the Attitude Era and he kind of wanted to try to recapture? He thought that was the greatest time in wrestling and he's trying to recapture that magic, you know, that lightning in the bottle again? Because, you know, NXT is on just to play defense. Vince didn't give a fuck. He's not trying to beat AEW. He's trying to.
They killed their whole roster last year selling for it to go to war with them. They in Survivor Series last year, this time to make NXT look like an official brand just to be to keep them under a million as a war strategy. Vince don't give a shit. NXT's a $40 million a year loss leader for him.
Yeah.
He makes no money on that whatsoever. It just feeds that underground super smart brand that wants to hijack a show. So for him, it keeps them under a million. It don't do shit for NXT. It does everything to keep AEW in a bear trap. And they're doing it of their own volition because they're plucking their ego strings. So let's stop. Let's identify that as a threat. I do this in my SWOT analysis on a media group on our Patreon, if you want to check it out. Let's identify as a threat, and we're going to just no sell it, or we're going to put it over and demean it. And because right now we've given them clout and status, just call them developmental and make them look like students, and automatically you've already won, and you move out of that territory to a higher ground, which is Thursday night.
Yeah.
They're going to come with you and you're going to be over 1.1 million. And then you can go, fuck you, Vince. We're over a million week after week after week. And then maybe we can start climbing up to 1.7 and being right there neck and neck with SmackDown. Cause right now, Wrestling college is holding you back. Why would you do that when you don't need to?
I mean, Impact did it. TNA did it. You know, they were doing 1.4, 1.5. And that people were like, oh, that's nothing, because WWE was doing threes and fours, right?
Yeah.
But you know, they would kill to have the 1.2, 1.5 that TNA had back then.
Wouldn't they? And now they're doing 160,000, which is just,
it's unfortunate. Yeah. It's just a bad taste that they got in their mouth. And I don't know that, you know.
I think it's more about marketing and distribution, man. I think it's about access, getting them into a lot more homes and, you know, because they only have like 3,000-4,000 following live on Twitter, which I would love to have that many, but like, you know, I don't have a TV show either. but yeah, that's the best show in wrestling, and that whole crew they deserve to be fucking seen by a bigger audience. And it's a shame that the worst creative is getting the most fucking TV time, you know? So, well,
I mean, you gotta point the blame at Anthem for that, right? For not promoting them.
I think it's the money you can put behind it and how much is of a loss. There's no crowds. There's no road shows. Everything there's a loss leader. Every month it's got to be losing. I'd probably say probably $150,000.
Yeah, but I mean, before COVID, they weren't putting anything behind them, right?
Not really, but I mean, when I was at Bound for Glory, what's the one in the summer? They had it in Canada at the club. That was a dope show. I mean, a third of the crowd was all indie workers from Canada, but it was at the nightclub, and it was a hot show, man. I had just done an indie show like an hour away from Toronto, and we're like, fuck it, let's go. And I wanted to go see Paradise Jimmy and shit. And when they put on a show, it's dope, man. There's no doubt about it. And they can get down or they can do cool stuff on pre-tape like Wrestle House was. I thought that was phenomenal stuff, man. I love that kind of wrestle crap thing. And it was all attention to detail with inside ribs and all the goodness that you want as a wrestling junkie was in there. But 160,000 people are seeing it, man, you know. And even when they do things like the Hardy Broken Universe and it shakes up the world, then they take it mainstream and no one can even get that right either, you know. It's tough, man.
Last question before we wrap up here. A lot of people may not understand your gimmick. Where did the $5 face slap start, and what's that all about for those that don't know?
For those that don't know, Bin Hameen, like I said, is the 19th prince of the House of Saud. If you want to go and do your 9/11 research, it won't take you long to find out who is really behind it. And World Trade Center 7, I suggest you go there. You can go to the Conspiracy Horseman and look up our interview with Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers. You can go back and look up Nice Peter Songs for Moms, the Bush song, 1, 2, and 3 in 2000. I've been on this kick as a comedian, post 9/11 PTSD. And then when I got to OVW in 2006, every day during the Iraq War, it was just Fox News on, and they're saying insurgency, insurgency, insurgency. And then Ali and Khalil were there, and Rip goes, "You look like a Packy. You're going to be their manager, and we're going to call the insurgency." So we were the insurgency, man, you know. And then Serena joined and Turkan Selik. So yada, yada. So I've been Bin Hameen since the beginning of my career. I just took my – it's actually from my eighth grade Spanish teacher for Benjamin. She just called me Bin Hameen.
That's hilarious. I didn't know that. Yeah, that's awesome.
And there's a double entendre of Ben Heyman, which tries to rib me with, but he didn't know that I'm an ECW fan from back in the day. So that doesn't do anything except make me pop. So there's multiple layers is how I try and do everything, but it's off my name, Benjamin. So heel shouldn't be out selling merchandise. That's just old school wrestling. Right. I break that rule, and it's because independent wrestling, you need to make your money, and it sucks. But I usually didn't make shit on merch, and that's fine. But for those who like the fucking heels that would get over on people or just wanted the vicious experience, I would try and do a little bit. So it's a carnival barker thing. So when people would walk by, you know, you've seen these indie fans. They're not the most attractive people. But I was like, a guy would walk by with his kids. I'd be like, "I'll discipline your child. No more wetting your bed. You'll be out picking up dog craps off the lawn tomorrow. $1 $5 face slap. You'll do all of your homework. I'll discipline all of your children." And parents would like laugh. They're like, "You want to go over and see him?" Look, he's like, "No." Right? It was just a carnival barker thing. Or a fat guy would walk by like, "Tomorrow you'll get up and run a 5K. All of your hair will grow back. $1 $5 face slap, you pathetic moron." And people like, "Fuck you, no, it won't." Or they'd laugh or they'd try. Yeah. they try and engage me, and then I'll cut them down even worse. It's pretty much the guy on the dunking booth talking shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Ben Hameen will also hit on your wife. Like, you, what are your skills, woman? Yes, I'm looking for new wives all the time. I heard you're very sexual in bed, and I heard you're terrible in the kitchen. Well, you better get cooking, because I've got something cooking for you, woman. You know, like, and just put him over a little bit. So yeah, he's a lover and a hater, and they'd be married, and I'd be like, bring your husband. I have much need for new suicide bombers. I'll put him right to work, you know, any of that shit. So the $5 face slap was just like calling people out for that. Then these smarks, 20 to 35 year olds, try to test me, and I get it on camera, and I ask them what they want to change in their life. You'll stop masturbating so much, go out and get a job, stop picking your ass, and stop playing video games all goddamn day, moron. You know, whatever it is. And I fucking get it on camera, put the $5, they exchange, and then I slap the shit out of them. So, oh,
you really,
they think it's going to be the old thigh slap. No way, bro.
Nice.
You're getting the old dad upside your fucking head where your face starts dropping. People get shocked. They're like, I didn't think you were going to hit me. I was like, what do you want, moron? You paid for it. I'm here to give you the max value. And two women have paid, and you know, I slapped the shit out of them too, man. Equal opportunity for the mark. So
Plus, they always teach you to make your shit look good too, right?
So yeah, I mean, some people I pull it on a little bit, but people I know I can get away with, especially the last 20, I've really been slapping the fuck out of people. And I'm at 47 now, before COVID when we stopped. So 47 people have paid me the $5 to slap the shit out of them.
That's easy money, man.
You know what I mean? Supply, man. You never run out, you know?
Now, what's harder, a Ben Hameen face slap or a Stevie Richards chop?
Man, Stevie does chop hard, but you can get chopped in the chest. But that face slap, you're going to know about it. There's nothing like that sting of a basketball or a hand upside the face. You know what I mean? It's shocking. A chop you know is coming, and you're like, oh, that sucked. But that face slap is, I think, just the shock value more than the pain.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, again, I appreciate you being here, man. Go ahead, do your plugs. Take us home.
Yeah, well, it's the Rad Turtles Infidels with Radicalized Rob, the French cell connection. He's greenlit, so you better watch your ass over there. You might just have a French toast or French fry explode in your stupid moron fat faces. But it's Hacker Hameen, patreon.com/Hameen Media Group. If you want the highest level marketing or the Rip Rogers fucking rotten podcast, there's only one place to get it, and that's at patreon.com/Hameen Media Group. If you're a cheap infidel, well, then you know you're getting all these shows free at hackerhameen.podbean.com and the affiliates at hameenmediagroup.podbean.com. And if you want to see me live, infidels, twitch.tv/conspiracyhorseman. And your stupid little Black Friday, your Black Friday Sales Matter sale is coming up at prowrestlingtees.com/Ben Hameen. Get all of the shirts that will have your stupid family talking, hey, what does that shirt mean, around your pathetic Christmas table. And there'll be no Thanksgiving this year, only over Zoom, because I commanded heels over strong all day long. Now, where are those turtles? It's time to make some soup. Yallah.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod, and you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind.